From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I stand before you today with anger and utter disdain, knowing that a Democrat member of the Illinois House of Representatives, Representative Luis Arroyo, appeared before a federal magistrate at a bond hearing this morning for the following: bribing a state official in exchange for official action with the United States currency. I am now calling upon Representative Luis Arroyo to resign by the end of business today. The actions today go to the heart of public trust in state government.
I've issued this statement, which speaks for itself. The disciplinary actions referenced in the statement relate to Representative Durkin's press conference this morning, and we're prepared to institute those procedures under the rules for a disciplinary committee, take testimony, and then make a recommendation to the House of Representatives.
I answered a question yesterday. I'm not going to continuously answer this every day of my life. I'm down here to do a job that I was elected to do, and that's what I'm going to do.
How do you feel about the fact that some member of your chamber, whether it's Senator Link or not, has been wearing an FBI wire while talking with other legislators?
Well, we just heard about this yesterday. We don't know who it is, so we haven't had a chance to reflect on it, really. We are definitely going to deal with responses to the other incidences that of ethics violations that have been alleged by working with the House and working on some ethics changes.
That's the Senate President John Cullerton addressing a federal criminal complaint that revealed a state senator worked with the FBI to sting another lawmaker for corruption. The lawmaker was State Representative Luis Arroyo, who was arrested and charged with bribery. We heard bipartisan calls for Arroyo's resignation, and also State Senator Terry Link denying he was the senator working with the federal government. And just before we sat down to record this program on Friday, it was announced that Luis Arroyo, the representative from Chicago, the Democrat, had decided to resign from office. We're going to talk about all of that and more this week on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. Joining me in the studios of NPR Illinois on the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield is Charlie Wheeler, an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, Sam Dunklaw, a reporter for NPR Illinois. And joining us from the studios of member station WILL in Urbana is Amanda Vinicky, a correspondent for Chicago Tonight on the PBS station WTTW. And Amanda, welcome back to State Week.
Thanks for having me.
Charlie, I'm going to start with you because you have, I believe, the statement from Luis Arroyo. Give us sort of the overview of what he had to say when announcing he is resigning from office.
Yeah, well, this was his letter. And unlike typically when people do this, they put in a paragraph or two, "I hereby resign this office." Well, he wrote a page and a half. It was filed at 10:30 on Friday morning with the clerk of the House, and he said what a privilege it was to serve, and he thanked the speaker, he thanked the governor, he thanked his colleagues, and he added, and I thought this was interesting, "My respect for you is such that I have decided that continuing my public service would cause a distraction to this august body. More importantly, it was my sincere desire to spare the members of this body from having to take such a difficult vote at a time when you're all running for re-election, considering how well we have all worked together."
And that difficult vote, Charlie, was going to be a vote to remove him from office.
Yeah, because ultimately what would happen, there's this special investigating committee. The special investigating committee would review all these allegations. Then there would be a second committee spelled out under the House rules. And it would be the reason I'm hesitating, I'm actually looking up the rule. It would be a select committee on discipline. That select committee of discipline would come to a conclusion, would present it to the House. There would be a member from the Republican side, a member from the Democratic side, who would be in charge of being, as it were, prosecutors who present the information to the House, and then the House would act. And the House could say, "Okay, this is no big deal." They could say, "We're going to issue you a reprimand," or they could remove the legislator from office. And I think that's what former Representative Arroyo was saying, that he didn't want them to have to go through this. He also added, I thought this was funny, he said, "I would like to add that you should all keep in mind that public service should be for a duration of time wherein you are an effective member of the body. Once you have gone beyond your period of peak effectiveness, you should really call it a day and retire while you can still enjoy the later years in your life. So I'm thinking, I guess he probably has gone past his peak effectiveness.
Well, Amanda,
you might say so.
Go ahead, Amanda.
Do you think that's an interesting statement in that this would not have been a particularly difficult vote? In fact, I think there are legislators who were, I was going to say, would be almost gleeful about it, but that's not the case, because I think certainly legislators are upset that this has happened, because it tarnishes the entire body. It tarnishes politicians everywhere when something like this allegedly occurs. But at the same time, it would have been quite an easy vote for any member, I think, of the General Assembly, spare maybe one or two who would be close to Arroyo. And nonetheless, I'm guessing would have taken that vote because, yes, with an election on the horizon, it would be difficult for them not to vote to force him out.
And Amanda, talk about what the charges actually are here. What is being alleged against the Representative Arroyo, former representative now?
He is charged with a federal count of bribery. It's pretty fascinating. A quick read, actually, I'd advise anybody. I'm sure you have it up on the NPR Illinois website. We definitely have it up at WTTW. It's interesting to quick read through, because what he supposedly did was he was working as a lobbyist as well as a legislator for a sweepstakes company. And most people probably don't know what that is. It basically, consider it a form of video poker, but it's not regulated like the video poker games that you do see really actually all over Springfield and in bars and restaurants all over the place. But they look the same. He was lobbying for one of these sweepstakes company, the city of Chicago, and he wanted to pass some sort of bill. We don't believe that there was one that was actually introduced that would have, according to the criminal complaint, come about during the veto session that began when instead Arroyo was in court. But he wanted something to happen in favor of that industry and was looking for a senator to sponsor such a law. Presumably, he would have been the sponsor in the House, Arroyo. And that is where, apparently, there was a state senator who is not named in the criminal complaint, but we heard some tape from him there. Apparently is Senator Terry Link, according to very reliable sources that the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times have cited. And so he met with Link and arranged for Link in exchange for sponsoring this law to be paid $2,500 a month, which, yeah, that adds up. Who wouldn't want that a month? But pretty measly sum when you think about it's breaking, of course, the federal law, and a bribery charge.
Sam, this did send some shockwaves throughout the Capitol.
Yeah, it did. And in fact, right almost the same time that Arroyo's resignation letter came, as we were taping this Friday, House Speaker Michael Madigan had issued a statement that essentially reminds people, you know, even though the representative has resigned and that disciplinary proceedings in the House will no longer be going forward, the allegations contained in this criminal complaint, he writes, go beyond anything that is considered a lapse in judgment or minor indiscretion. This is not, unfortunately, the first time that Mike Madigan has had to get out in front of some sort of wrongdoing or ne'er-do-wellism going on in the Capitol. And so he and others are trying to remind the public that even though he's no longer a representative, we're not going to sweep this under the rug.
Well, even though this is something that, unfortunately, we have seen in the past, Charlie, this is, to me, I don't remember another lawmaker at least being, you know, the allegation that the lawmaker wore a wire when talking to another lawmaker. Do you remember anything like that?
I don't. And I say it hesitantly because, I mean, I've watched this stuff for a long time and I've seen people go down for sponsoring bills, but usually it wasn't because somebody was wired up and was recording them. So I wouldn't say definitely not, but it does seem different.
Amanda, we mentioned Terry Link, though, there. And Terry Link, you know, a lot of times when somebody is confronted about something, you know, by a source says this was the person that that wore the wire that helped, you know, set up the Representative Arroyo, that person might say no comment to it, or, you know, they don't want to get into something like that. You can take what you want from it. He was very adamant, at least he denied very adamantly that he was the one that was involved in this.
Despite him not wanting to be asked about it every day, I think that is in fact what is going to happen. It's interesting. I've talked to a lot of people about this because that is truly what has the Capitol ablaze. First of all, the charge against Arroyo in that it was, again, such blatant bribery, apparently. Again, this is alleged, but seems pretty clear if you read the criminal complaint, particularly if there is, in fact, this recording worn by whichever senator it is. Why would Link deny it? We have seen in Chicago, there was an alderman, Danny Solis, who everybody knows had been wearing a wire, and he was basically run out of town. I mean, that may well be why Link is trying to distance himself from this, if in fact he is the guy. It may be that he actually isn't. I mean, he is denying it, but it certainly would make his life, I think, even more difficult if he came out and admitted or even to give a no comment. I'm not sure what the strategy is there. I know that I did talk to him, for example, about gaming legislation. As the city of Chicago looks to change the tax structure of a Chicago casino, because the thought had been, well, can anything happen now in Springfield with a lot of these big matters because of this cloud of corruption, and particularly when it comes to gambling measures with Link being the guy? But in fact, Senate President John Cullerton has said, yes, Link will remain the caucus's point person on gambling issues. And Link himself said, yeah, I think that there's a deal, or at least a rough agreement. He expects that it will go forward in the second half of veto session. So he's trying to go about his business. We did get a statement from House Republicans in reaction to the news of Arroyo's resignation just a bit ago. And in a sense, turning the spotlight now to Link, where you have one of the leading House Republicans, Tom Demmer, now saying that Link needs to resign his spot from the Legislative Ethics Commission while this federal investigation plays out. And regardless, I have to say that there were a lot of people were joking about it during the veto session in Springfield. You had lobbyists and legislators kind of saying, hey, watch out. Hey, are you sure you're not wearing a wire? Ooh, that coat looks puffy. You got something under there? There were a lot of jokes, but there's definitely an unease that is behind those jokes. And that is a fear of, wow, what else might have been recorded by the FBI, particularly if it was Senator Link, given that he is a key player in negotiations. He's a leading Senate Democrat, and this apparently wasn't the first time that he'd been working with the FBI. He had previously done so, it appears, or whoever, again, this was in 2016.
Hmm. Sam, this was, I think Amanda touched on the fact that, you know, everybody's sitting there a little bit nervous. Mm-hmm. Did that come across from what you were talking to people? Did you notice that, you know, people were a little bit standoffish to each other over this, maybe concerned of who's possibly cooperating in an investigation?
Yeah, slightly. Brian Mackey, our State House editor, and I have been walking around the Capitol in those late days this past week, and had asked a good mix of Republicans and Democrats, first of all, if they were worried about whoever it is that was wearing the wire, and secondly, if they would consider taking up legislation, gambling legislation, particularly that has Terry Link's name on it. And everybody, there was a good mix of reaction, but mostly what you had was Representative Elizabeth Hernandez, I think, had the best response in saying that, you know, unfortunately, the bad actions of a few have kind of spoiled it all for the rest of us, in saying, well, you know, I hope I certainly wasn't caught on that wire. I'm going to be careful about what I say.
And you have two other cases, Charlie, that, or maybe they're all related. We don't really know, but two other lawmakers, at least, who are still in office right now, and that is the Senator Tom Cullerton. Now, he has been charged with getting paid by the Teamsters Union for doing no work. And then we have the State Senator Martin Sandoval, who has not been charged yet, but he had his home, his government offices searched. Doesn't necessarily, I think, put a lot of confidence into the public of what's going on in Illinois government right now.
No, and there's this perception that Illinois is a corrupt state. We've had governors go to prison. We've had attorneys general go to prison. We've had treasurers go to prison. We've had lawmakers of both parties go to jail. We've had judges go to jail. And so the question is Illinois more corrupt than other places, or are the U.S. attorneys in Illinois just more diligent than elsewhere? And I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek because we do have this long history. But from my experience, I would say the vast majority of the people in the legislature are there for good purposes. Now, they differ in philosophy. They differ in how public policy issues should be decided. They differ in their partisanship. But I think they're all pretty much honest people. And that's from having watched it for a long number of years and being up close for a quarter of a century. But you do have these bad actors, and you've had them all along.
And I think, Charlie, you're right about that. And yet at the same time, Amanda, you touched on this earlier. You see loopholes, I would almost call it, in the sense that Arroyo can be a lobbyist. In not necessarily to state government, but he's a lobbyist on something like this gambling legislation. That, to me, just opens the door for this type of stuff to occur.
That there are not great rules in Illinois in terms of when a legislator needs to recuse him or herself. They don't need to give any sort of reason why. There is now a proposal offered, again, by Republicans who are sort of, you know, pouncing on this because thus far only Democrats have been entangled. And by the way, Sandoval, it's and Cullerton, at least in the Sandoval case, it's not just him. There are a bunch of South Suburban mayors who are Democratic leaders as well. Again, haven't been charged, but certainly the feds have their eye on them. So point being, Republicans have already introduced legislation that would put some of those restrictions and say that legislators and their family members cannot lobby municipalities. But yeah, I mean, that's just one of the things that does very much, I think, open the door. You will have legislators going forward to look at now, there's a task force is in the making to look at ethics measures, what else can be done. You see that happen time and time again. There was a big effort post-Blagojevich, of course, and yet they didn't adopt all of the regulations that were recommended by a task force back then. It's sort of done in piecemeal fashion. And further with this conduct with Arroyo, you know, I was talking with somebody who was saying, you know, what do we do? Do you make something double illegal? Mm-hmm. At this point in time, bribery is obviously and, of course, patently something that would be wrong behavior for a legislator to engage in. So there is at once, yes, very much space for the General Assembly to pass some further restrictions, particularly taking a close look at themselves. Perhaps we could see maybe actions with the revolving door of lawmakers being a voting member of the General Assembly one day and then a lobbyist the very next. Restrictions that state employees need to follow, but not the people who make the laws for those other people. So there's a lot there. And at the same time, some of this activity is people just evidently, according to this criminal complaint, are looking quite flippantly at the law.
Well, it occurs to me, Amanda, you mentioned the Blagojevich incident, and there were quite a few reforms that were made, but they all dealt with the executive branch. State employees, the elected constitutional officers, that level of government. And they didn't really take a look at themselves, despite the fact that their inspector generals over the years have recommended that the General Assembly give more authority to the Office of Legislative Inspector General so that the inspector general is more of an independent operation. The way it is now, the inspector general really can't do anything without the consent of the lawmakers. And Senator Jason Berrickman, a Republican from Bloomington, who's one of the sponsors of the GOP measures to tighten up the ethic regulation, says it's like having the fox guard the hen house. And so the current legislative inspector general, Cal Pope, has written a letter saying, I think the inspector general should have independence, and when that person finds a case that's founded, in other words, where there's some offense committed, that inspector general should be able to make it public without having to rely on the approval of the lawmakers themselves to do so.
And legislators have basically been kicking and screaming, it seems, against doing that. So this has come up time and time again, and they haven't taken action. This isn't, you know, new. It is something that they've had the opportunity to change. They have passed laws, including last session, that rework some that ethics process for investigating legislators. But, of course, they have not yet gone there.
Something I'll add, too.
And one of the things also from observing over time, lawmakers have never voluntarily imposed ethics restrictions. It's always been in response to some scandal. Even going back 50 years when they did the new constitution, they put in economic disclosure. That was in response to scandals involving a couple of Supreme Court justices who got stock in a bank surreptitiously from a guy who had a case pending before the Supreme Court. And so it's always, and maybe this is cynical, it's always, if I'm a lawmaker, I don't want to put these restrictions, but the time comes when it's more painful for me not to do it than it is for me to do it.
Mm-hmm. And something I'll add too, there are a number of Republicans that are on the committee that governs ethics for the legislature, and they've been making a lot of loud trumpeting this week about, you know, we're the party that stands for ethics, so we want to pass all these ethics legislation. Well, we'll see if they can walk the walk.
Amanda, last time on this show, we talked a lot about the mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, and some of the things she wanted from state lawmakers during the veto session, things that would help with the budget in the city of Chicago. She's had her hands full with a teacher strike that has finally come to an end there. Some people think she may have been weakened by this. Does this hurt her ability to get this agenda through?
You know, I think that was certainly a distraction. It needed to be her focus. But I saw members of her lobbying team in the Capitol, or at least in Springfield, during the veto session. They're working it. Is the teacher strike the reason that we didn't see any action during the first half of veto session on her agenda? Or is it the distraction of the Arroyo situation? Or is it that she is a novice mayor who people, some allege, are very critical, I should say, of her team and of how she is going about things? Or is it because, again, these are just difficult? And as we have been talking about, legislators have a propensity to put the bad things off, and there's another week left of veto session. And so negotiations are still continuing. And those things that she wants, by the way, are, again, a fix, is what she would determine it as, for the Chicago casino's tax structure after a report that said the tax setup under law right now is just too onerous, that nobody would want to run a casino in Chicago. As I think I mentioned earlier, Senator Link did tell me that there is at least some sort of cursory deal that he said would be a win-win for Chicago and as well as all of the other casinos. So perhaps less taxes there, and then or what? Of course, fewer taxes means less money for state government and for the local governments as well. So we don't know yet what that looks like. The other thing that she's really asking for is for the ability to pass a graduated real estate transfer tax. So basically something that whenever luxury homes are sold, they would have to pay a higher tax and then a lower tax if some homes under $500,000 are sold within city limits. So those are the two things that she's asking for. I would think that there is a good reason for the legislature to kind of get on board with a Chicago casino change outside of whatever it is the mayor wants, and that is because now that this report is out there, it makes it difficult for a casino to go forward, and of course the state's counting on that money as well.
Amanda, just a couple of minutes left here, but I wanted to go back to something you mentioned before, that there had been some rumblings of people not being happy with her team. What seems to be some of the criticism that's happening there?
You know, just I think really that she's new. You hear this, I think, often whenever somebody comes in fresh, because everybody is fresh, but that perhaps just not really following the Springfield way of doing things in terms of making connections with legislators. Also going forward publicly with ideas without having run them by leading lawmakers or even the governor, going back to, for example, in the summer where she at a press conference suggested that she wanted the state to essentially bail out Chicago's pensions and take on that pension debt. And right away, right there, you could see Governor Pritzker being somewhat dumbstruck and saying no right away. And it's interesting to me because there are folks in Chicago who say, yeah, you know, is that possible? As somebody who's followed state government, I laugh and say, of course not. No way. No, the state isn't going to do that. That's an easy one. So I just think that there is some of that that is caught up in things. And, of course, legislators, as we've pointed out, are running for re-election. So something like giving the Chicago City Council authority to pass a graduated real estate transfer tax that would increase taxes on some, again, lowering it on others. This is even that, in a sense, could be an easy vote. It's just asking for permission. But in this climate where nobody has any money and then taxes are kind of constantly on the agenda, that might be a harder vote for Chicago legislators when you look at how that could be used in campaign brochures.
Well, and as a matter of fact, there are 13 House Democrats who've said that they will not be for the mayor's proposed graduated real estate transfer tax at the levels and the rates that she's proposed, and all the Republicans are against
it. Well, because, Charlie, she wants, it's not the rates, it's they want money to be dedicated to homelessness.
Well,
and she wants the money to be open-ended.
What Representative Guzzardi has said is that if you adjust the levels at which you impose these higher taxes, you could come up with enough money to take care of the homeless issue and still help the budget. So as it stands now, there's got to be some adjustments made or it's not going to go anywhere.
And she right away said no, which speaks to the difficulty. Is she willing to negotiate or is she acting dictatorial?
Let's now go to our notes from the field. And Sam, let's start with you.
Well, an interesting bill that passed the General Assembly entirely, it is now on Governor Pritzker's desk, is a bill to allow students to take time off to vote. The principle behind it is simple. If on election day, if students are able to, they should be able to go to their polling place. But opponents have said, well, by that same token, those that aren't necessarily care about doing their civic duty would also just take a simple day off. There was some contention, but we'll see where it goes.
Okay. And Charlie?
Well, President Trump was in town last week, and he said some stuff about the city of Chicago that I thought was just goofy, to use a polite expression. He said that it's safer in Afghanistan. And I'm thinking to myself, in Afghanistan, there's been thousands of people killed within the last month by bombings. You don't see that in Chicago. You don't see people wearing suicide vests. But the comment that earned him a pants on fire rating from Political Fact was, he said, over the last 2 years, the number of murders in America and America's major cities has dropped, unlike here in Chicago, by more than 10%. Well, as a matter of fact, Chicago has seen a 30% decrease in murders over the last several years. And this is while the national decline has been around 7%. So, as I say, he earned a rating of pants on fire from this fact-checking organization.
We'll believe it there this week. That's it for State Week. In this edition, our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Sam Dunklaw, and Amanda Vinicky of Chicago Tonight. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org or on the NPR One app. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.